live for another round of the debate series. I want to thank everyone for listening in. Today we have very much a heavyweight matchup in store for you. This will be all NBA questions that we're asking here. So the two participants I have, we're trying to get them on the line and secured right now.
We're not trying to get them. Them is plural. It's one person we're waiting on.
We're not waiting on anyone. Jade's on the line. It is still 8 p.m. He is on the line. I will not allow this slander to happen. So these are two of the most highly touted NBA minds in IBS. It's a grudge match if you haven't seen thus far. There were certainly some good materials gone back and forth for the kind of pre-debate rounds. So I think everyone's pretty excited about what's going in. So first and foremost, I just want to give them a second to say hello. Jade, are you on the line?
I am.
Okay. And we've heard my brother as well. So I'm going to quickly go over the rules. Then I'll give you guys a brief introduction, and then we'll get right into the questions. So first, just to start off, so we can give a little bit about the format, there will be 10 total questions. These questions will be coming from both the current NBA as well as the past NBA. Each person initially will be given 1 minute to give their answer. Then the next person who was not initially given the question will be allowed to rebuttal as well as give their answer, and then it will go back to the person that was initially posed the question for another 30 seconds. Time will be held pretty strictly, as we do have a time limit of 45 minutes here, and I'll also be kind of cutting people off if it gets a little bit out of control with the talking over each other. Any questions about the rules?
We're good.
Sounds like we're good to go. RC called first, so I'll let RC give his introduction first.
It's training day, Jay. It's training day. It all started 3 years ago when you would come on my page, a young pup, talking about Jeff Green was great, talking about Paul Pierce was better than LeBron, and we've come a long way. But I'm here to make you great, Jade. I've replaced most of that childish, Pollyannish optimism with realism, and today is the final chapter. I'm going to finally make you great and beat all that silliness and that childishness out of you.
All right. Thanks for that. Jade?
Hey, what he calls training day, I call his day of reckoning. Because, I remember joining the page. I remember the beatdowns. I remember all the contrary, you know, fact-ripping of my beloved Celtics. And I plan on avenging all of that today.
Sounds good. Well, I think everyone's excited, including myself. So let's get right back in right into some of these questions. Jade, I will let you go first with this question. What is the most important quality in building a title contender in today's NBA? You will have 1 minute to answer that question.
Offense. I'm going to make it very simple. I think today you have to have a transcendent offensive player. There's no other answer, in my opinion, because, I mean, you look at Steph Curry and what he's able to do just because of his scoring ability. I mean, specifically, yes, he is a shooter, but his scoring ability, what that allows his team to do on both ends of the floor is absolutely destructive. And, you know, you look at Kevin Durant and Russell Westbrook and, you know, even Cleveland, although they've struggled, you know, they have three great offensive players. I do think that the game today, you really have to have transcendent scores in order to have your system, you know, maximized and running at its most potent.
Okay. Good answer. RC, you'll be given a minute now to rebuttal that.
I slightly disagree. Obviously, scoring with the rules changes, that scoring is up and it's much easier to score, and that's essential. But You want to build a contender. You want to build a championship team. It starts with the general manager. The general manager has to establish a culture like Greg Popovich did, Jerry West before him, like Red Auerbach way before them. It all starts with the general manager putting those pieces in place. Look at what they've done in Golden State and how they put those pieces in place and what we have now. And look at LeBron's failure and how he's not been able to put those pieces in place. But then look at what Pat Riley did, putting the pieces in place. You have to start at the top. The owner has to hire a very good general manager that can put everything together. And I know that sounds simple, but if you look at it, the teams are run by extraordinary men, the teams that have been winning over the last 10, 15 years, and all the history of the league.
Okay. Now, Jade, you will get another 30 seconds to kind of say what you need to say about that.
You know, I think that's all well and good, and I'm certainly not going to disagree that you need a top-shelf general manager to build a team. But I think as far as having a basketball team on the floor that can win, you have to have a great score. I mean, you can be the greatest GM in the world, and you won't crack 50 wins if you don't have a transcendent score.
Okay.
The greatest GM in the world will find a transcendent score, you think?
All right. Yeah, right. That is not your time. We will be cutting people off if they talk out of their time. All right, next question. RC, you'll be going first with this, some more technical questions as well. Given the new rules that you both kind of alluded to, what strategy defensively would you implement as a coach to combat some of the analytics and current defensive rules?
Well, basically what you have to do these days is you have to pack the paint and run people off the three-point line and force them into long twos. That's the strategy, because basically what everybody wants to do is get threes, and they want to go to the rim. You pack the paint. You got to have a rim protector back there. Pack the paint. Don't let anything in. You got to really aggressively run them off the line and make them shoot twos, and the best defensive team in the league, long twos, do that.
Okay, that was a quick answer. Jay, your go.
You know, for me, it's a matter of tempo. Defensively, I think, you look at a team like Golden State, as incredible as they are offensively, Cleveland came, pretty close without a lot of weapons last year to winning that series. And to me, a lot of it was the tempo. I mean, they did a great job of making that a slow, ugly, grind-it-out game. I mean, the amount of possessions in a lot of those games were staggeringly low for the Golden State Warriors because of the tempo control that Cleveland was able to exercise and use to their advantage. So I think you got to slow the game down in order to beat a top-shelf offensive basketball team.
RC, would you like to rebuttal his answer there?
Yeah, I mean, that wasn't really the question. He's saying that offense is the key to playing good defense. You asked for a strategy for defense to stop these high-powered offenses, and he related to the slowing down the pace, which offense could still be very efficient in a slow-paced game. They don't necessarily have to run to be a very efficient offensive team, and the efficiency ratings are calculated by using pace as well. So I don't think he answered the question adequately, and I think mine was more of a strategic answer that we were looking for when the question was asked about the strategy defensively of how to stop the offenses.
Okay. We will go on to the next question. So I think we'll have a good answer here. So this is a pretty straightforward question. If you had to pick one of these two individuals as who is the greatest player, would you pick Wilt or Kareem Abdul-Jabbar?
And
Jade,
whose question is this?
And Jade is your guy.
I think you got to go with Wilt Chamberlain here, and a lot of it comes down to just ability and athleticism. I think from strictly an athletic standpoint, Wilt Chamberlain is the greatest athlete of his century, probably. I mean, stamina, athleticism, vertical leap, you name it, and I mean, he could really play too. I think Kareem at times had a little bit more finesse, but I don't think that he had more ability in any way, shape, or form than Wilt Chamberlain.
Okay. RC, it is your go now.
I'm going to actually go with Kareem. And for all of Wilt's individual skill level, Jade himself has greatly pointed out that he was lacking sometimes. He didn't make those around him better. Kareem did. Kareem was a more skilled player, maybe by the fact that Wilt could dominate the way he did, and I'm not taking anything away from Wilt. But we're talking about a five-time MVP. The contemporaries around give Wilt 2 to 3 MVPs and 2 titles. Kareem also has 5 titles. And Kareem was a revolution in the basketball game. He was Wilt with rings. And his longevity and the ability to win with Oscar Robertson and Magic Johnson? That's insane. He won championships with Oscar Robertson, Magic Johnson, James Worthy, all that cast of characters. Kareem, and ESPN put him up there, the second greatest player of all time. When you talk about greatness, Wilt felt short quite a few times, especially in Game 7, where he sat out with a knee injury, and Bill Russell said, I would have played. That's Jay's hero, and he's picking Wilt.
All right, your go for time for a rebuttal, Jade.
No doubt about it. There were times when Wilt Chamberlain would use his own ability more than he would probably exercise his, you know, teammates or try to bring teammates into the game. But, you know, at the end of the day, the seasons where Wilt put it all together and he was utilizing his teammates and he was finding people leading the league in assists, there is no way that Kareem Abdul-Jabbar was more talented or had better seasons than Wilt Chamberlain at his absolute apex.
Okay. Good answers from both of you. Here's the next question. This one will go to RC first. Who is the best 6'2 and under player of all time and why?
That's almost a trap question for me. Goodness gracious. People laying out bait. No, it's not Allen Iverson. It's Isaiah Thomas. And Isaiah Thomas' stats on the surface don't look as good as Allen Iverson's because he had to play within the team concept. He wasn't allowed to just jack up shots and have a great defense behind him. They had an efficient offense because not only could they just play defense because of the era, they also were a very good, very underrated offensive team. And Isaiah Thomas is the one who helped lead that and also a very crafty defender as well. So I'm definitely going with Isaiah Thomas. You look at Game 6 with the bad ankle against the Lakers in 1988 where he took over the game, 25 points in the fourth quarter. This is iconic. And that's why Zeke is the best player 6'2 and under in the history of the league.
Okay. Jade, you're good.
You know, it's hard to knock Isaiah Thomas because, I mean, at the collegiate level, professionally, this guy not only was a great individual talent, but, you know, he played great basketball. But I will absolutely make a case that Allen Iverson is indeed the best basketball player at his size because, you know, you consider the point to Isaiah Thomas's, you know, accolades and his greatness, but, you know, he played with an absolutely legendary coach and a complete basketball team that employed one of the best strategies, you know, had one of the best systems of an entire era. And Allen Iverson was never as fortunate. But, I mean, his individual abilities were incredible. I mean, that guy could make magic off the dribble. He was lightning quick. He could get to the rim. I mean, at times, and I know his jump shot was shaky, but he could hit shots. I just think, you know, for my money, Allen Iverson's individual talent was phenomenal. And even though he did not play with a Hall of Fame coach or with Hall of Fame players, still a great player and probably the most skilled.
Okay, RC, you're good.
These are, I don't even know, he can't believe this stuff. Dikembe Mutombo will be in the Hall of Fame. Larry Brown is in the Hall of Fame. Larry Brown is the only coach in the history of basketball to win an NCAA championship and an NBA championship. He won without Iverson. And the teams that Isaiah was on, those were teams. Those weren't guys with just standouts. They had Rodman before the prime. Dumars was a fine player, but not a star-laden team at all. So if we're trying to sing a sad story for Iverson, that's just false.
All right. On to the next question, Jade. This one will be for you. In today's game, is coaching overrated or underrated?
I'm going to say it's underrated since those are the two choices because I look at some of the teams that are, you know, really at their best right now, and you cannot underrate coaching on those teams. I mean, right now, the two best teams in basketball, you got Golden State and then you got San Antonio. And, yes, these teams have a great collection of talent, but you can't underrate, you know, Greg Popovich and Steve Kerr and what they're able to do, you know, systematically, you know, and with X's and O's, you know. Yeah, you cannot underrate coaching when the success of basketball teams is right out there. And the teams that are struggling, I mean, some of the teams that are struggling in basketball right now have the talent, but they don't have the coaching. And to me, you know, Cleveland is the greatest example of what it means to have talent but not have the great coach.
Okay.
It's underrated because when we talk about coaches, especially at that level, the higher you get, the more coaching is about implementing systems and managing people. And at the NBA level, you have to implement your system. And people say, oh, look at the Warriors. Look what they did without Kerr. But Kerr implemented the system and the principles. And that there it allowed that Luke Walton could get in there and drive the ship. That's coaching in the NBA. You manage people, you create systems, and you follow through. And his team has a fine coach that he didn't even mention, Brad Stevens. He's getting the most out of that team. And that's really an AC that he has in the hunt for top five seed.
Okay. Jay, you have any rebuttal to that?
I don't think that we're really, you know, opposing each other on this one, but I will say that, you know, I know obviously Brad Stevens is another example, and there's others. You know, I mean, the teams that are even young teams that are, you know, on the come up right now all have, you know, all have great coaching and are all growing as a team because of coaching.
Okay. We are out of time for that particular question. So this question goes to you, RC. What would the Golden State's record be? Obviously, this is an approximation and guessing. Without Steph Curry, basically, what level of a team are they? And explain kind of your thought process behind that.
Well, I'm going to see if I can actually answer the question because a lot of people, the other person doesn't seem to be answering the actual questions. Steph Curry, they'd be a 50-win team. Klay Thompson is much better than people think. He's almost become underrated with what Draymond Green has done. He's become seemingly the third wheel, but Klay Thompson is the second best shooter in the league, just overshadowed. When you have the bench as deep as it is, with Iguodala, Barbosa, Livingston is crucial. If Livingston started, he would be a very serviceable point guard. So a 50-win team, you wouldn't have Steph to be efficiently offensively. You might be better defensively, maybe even 55 wins. I think they could be better than the Clippers are without Blake Griffin. So I think that's the range that you have with a Steph-less Golden State Warriors.
Okay. Jade, it is your go to answer that question.
You know, I'm going to say 45 on the low, 50 on the high, and 50 being very high to me. And, I mean, you got to acknowledge that they do have a lot of talent. I mean, they're deep when you have Livingston and Iguodala and Dre. I mean, they have multiple, not only great players, but they have multiple playmakers. And, you know, there's some really talented defenders on this team. And, you know, he talked about Klay Thompson, who is a bit underrated. But, you know, I can't see them getting 55 wins and being, you know, top one, top two seed in the West without Steph Curry. I mean, he really is the magic for that team. What his shooting does for that team, what his ability off the dribble allows them to do systematically would be gone. So while I still think it would be a good basketball team, I don't think that there would be – I think by midseason they would be in a rut.
Okay. That is your time. RC, you have 30 seconds to rebut.
I mean, we're roughly talking about 20 games. Let's say they win 70 and I said 50 to 55. That's 20 games they'd be losing without Steph. And you can't take the opinion of this man with Klay Thompson because he said Doug McDermott would be better than Klay Thompson. So I don't think you can evaluate. I don't think Jay is qualified or has the credentials to evaluate anything involving Klay Thompson.
All right. I'm going to the next question. This is a little bit layered, so you can kind of take it in the direction you want from an interpretation standpoint, but I think you'll understand what the person is asking. So with today's NBA game, obviously there's a heavy focus on analytics, and there's certain things that are emphasized in today's game, whether that be, as we talked about, the three-point shot, the lack of mid-range jumper, certain rules from a defensive and principal standpoint. With the new analytics, what do you think has been the biggest overreaction from a scheme standpoint that NBA teams are almost universally implementing that you think maybe a team should be daring enough to go the opposite direction and try things a little bit differently than the math?
That's the longest question I've ever heard. You're reading a damn novel.
What do you want me to do, man? I'm giving you questions out. If you don't like the question, you can pass on that answer. So, Jade, it's your turn.
I was just joking. But anyway.
I'm not even replying.
Go ahead, Jade.
Jade.
Who's going to take this one on right now?
I'm trying to say you, but I was getting interrupted as the moderator. It's your go.
All right. I think right now the biggest overreaction in basketball is the lack of mid-range shooting. I think to a degree, I think it can still be effective. I think you still need easy baskets. And I only say this because there's a lot of teams in the league who are not good three-point shooting teams because they don't have the personnel. So instead of stepping inside and looking for easier baskets, they still try to employ the three-point shot at a high volume. And I just think that that's really counterproductive. And I definitely think a lot of teams would be better suited to score inside the three-point line.
I tend to agree. The evolution of the stretch four is an illustration of this. A lot of people out there shooting threes that they really shouldn't have to, and they're saying it's the percentages. But you can't make up for game. And if a guy has a wide-open shot and you want him to back up or you want him to pass up a 16-footer so he can get a three, basketball is in your soul. There's a rhythm to it. And I think sometimes what they're doing now with the analytics, you're ruining the soul of the game and the rhythm and the flow of it to chase numbers.
Back to you, Jade.
Nah, I think we pretty much are on the same page on this one.
Okay. This question will go to RC. What team currently would be the best fit for Carmelo if he were to raise his no trade clause?
There is no best fit for Carmelo Anthony. He's a loser. Any team that he goes to is not gonna, if it's a contender, it's not going to get better. You're talking about a one-way player who has tried to improve a little bit. But since he's been in New York, they went to the playoffs one time. There's been enough talent. They make excuses. That team should be in the playoffs every year. If you're a superstar in the East, your presence alone, by making people better, should be able to make them make the playoffs. So I am not on the Carmelo bandwagon. I have never been. He is one of the greatest scorers ever played in NBA history. But he's a one-dimensional player. He's a one-trick pony. If you put him on Cleveland, I guess he would score. But then you'd have another person that can't defend. So there is no fit for a contender that Carmelo Anthony makes better. You just got somebody that's going to demand the ball and not play defense. And you basically have an older version of Kevin Love and Kyrie Irving because that's what they bring to the table. See, that's not winning basketball. He's not a winner.
Okay. Jace?
I think that's a little bit over the top. I think saying Carmelo Anthony, there's no place in the league right now that he could thrive in more than New York, I think is a bit much. And you know, this guy is one of the more one-dimensional superstars in the NBA, but I mean, he's a much better defender than what RC is saying. This is not a Kyrie Irving or a Kevin Love type of defender. Melo is competent. He has played in some horrible defensive systems, and I'm certainly not going to say that this guy would ever challenge for, you know, all-NBA defense, but this guy is absolutely a competent defender, and if you put him on a team, especially on a team with a lot of defensive pieces, this guy could do very well. And, you know, I'm pressed for time. I'll throw Boston out just for the sake of getting an answer. And I think he could do well for that team. That team has a lot of defense. They have a system that makes plays. Their system makes plays. So the fact that he would, you know, not necessarily be a guy out there but negated, and he would be the kind of prolific scorer that a team like that lacks.
Okay.
And Jay said the key thing. Yeah, and first of all, he misquoted me because I didn't say he couldn't thrive. But he said to say that there wouldn't be a team, that Carmelo wouldn't thrive. I never said that. I said a team would not thrive. Carmelo's always going to get his buckets, but will that make the team better? We're seeing, that's like saying putting Kobe Bryant on a team. And Carmelo's better than Kobe right now, but let's say Kobe from 3 years ago. You're still, is it a net positive?
He would fill a void, though. He would fill a void.
All right, Jay, one at a time.
Are we
going
to get that? We're going to get that?
Jay, one at a time, Jay. Go ahead, RC.
I think we should go across a little bit. But anyway, but yeah, and his defenders, the defending thing he was saying was overrated because he's not awful, but he's not good. He's not a positive defender. He's not even where Steph Curry is as a defender. They hide him on the worst possible big they possibly can, and his effort level has to be questioned at all times.
All right, I can allow a little freedom for the last couple of questions if y'all want to kind of just go and talk over each other if there's more to say on Melo.
You don't think that Carmelo Anthony could fill a void for a team that already had a lot of their strategy together, who already had their system together, but just lacked.
The system would be over because he's
going to
stop the ball. He's a ball stopper. Your team moves the ball. You don't really think Carmelo Anthony would make your team better. Maybe in an isolated, maybe in the playoffs, maybe he can get a couple of good games, but he's going to stop the ball. Whatever system you have is going to be torn down by him and his style of play.
He's a big boy. He could scale back his possession.
All right,
he's never done it before.
We're going to move on to the next
he's
question.
He's been on garbage teams.
There's two more questions left. Try to get these out, then we'll give time for kind of the closing statements. So here, the second and last question, a little bit of a mix, but it's still very much NBA related. What lottery team is the best fit for the top prospect in the upcoming NBA draft, and the top prospect can be whoever you think will be the best NBA player?
This is Jade, right?
No, you are going first on this one.
Okay. Well, I'm giving Ben Simmons as my top prospect, and I honestly think, as ironic as this is I think it would be New York. If you had somebody that's a playmaker on that team, and if, which I don't know of it, but he could do it, though, because Carmelo would just like to shoot. Ben could set him up. His versatility, he could do a little bit of everything. You have Porzingis. You'd have a nice base to build on if Ben Simmons went to the Knicks. And I think the platform that he's looking for is in New York as well.
Jade, it is your turn.
Yeah, it would be really hard to counter Ben Simmons and try to be, you know, contrarian for the sake. I mean, this guy is going to be a really good NBA player. Guys are going to thrive around him because of his passing ability. He's a big who can step out, and his jump shot to me is probably better than it even looks right now in college, which in the NBA they're really going to utilize. This guy is going to be awesome. And, you know, as far as the team that I think that he would make the biggest impact on that has a chance, you know, I'm going to go with the Lakers strictly because I think that, you know, they have one of the best chances in this draft. And, you know, they're superstar starved. I mean, they're starved for any kind of future. They just need something. I mean, even a team like Boston right now has a coach and a system in place to where, you know, they can win 45, you know, games and add a couple pieces and do well. I mean, the Lakers need this kind of player to move forward, and he would really be that for them.
Okay.
Good answer, Jade. Get Byron Scott another player to destroy. That team is already too young. I don't think – now, on the surface, if they fire Byron Scott, they put Luke Walton there. But if you want to put Ben Simmons in L.A. and you got a coach that can't manage young players, that's a horrible situation, and the team's too young. So there's no leadership. Kobe, they've wasted two seasons, or maybe more, with the Kobe farewell tour. So I think that's an exceptionally bad fit.
All right. On to the last question. Hopefully this will get some good dialogue going. Who is currently the most overrated player in the NBA, and why? Jay, this one is on you.
Oof. Wow. You know, right now, I'm going to go with James Harden. I think that this guy obviously is just a really, really complete scorer. I think he's a really complete offensive player in general because of his passing ability. But I think when you look at him, you have to be looking at one of the worst leaders, one of the worst superstar leaders in basketball right now. And you could probably just make a case throughout basketball history. This guy is awful. I mean, I don't see him holding teammates accountable, at least not in the way that you should. I don't see him being able to gel with anybody else on that team effectively. I mean, him and Dwight Howard just have not been able to figure out the whole 1-2 punch thing. This guy's body language sucks sometimes. He doesn't play really much of any defense. I mean, you talk about Carmelo Anthony earlier. This guy thinks if he pokes his hand a couple of times that, you know, he's played some defense, but you know, he's overrated.
All right, RC, your go.
This is an unpopular answer. I'm going to do this and maybe even risk losing the debate over it. But Boogie Cousins, how many times have we seen a player make all these points, get all these stats on a really bad team, and then when they go to a good team, they can't? Now, I'm not saying he's not a very talented player, but he's a idiot, because he isn't. But he shoots like 44% to 46%, and he shoots 3 threes a game. He's a center that doesn't shoot 50% or close to it from the field on a garbage team where he can get just about any shot he wants. His talent is good, but we've exaggerated how good Boogie Cousins is and why he's shooting 3 threes a game. I have no idea. And Jade exaggerated by James Harden being one of the worst leaders of all time. Are you serious? And he's not a great leader, but stop it, please. The exaggerations are hyperbole, just ridiculous.
All right, Jade.
Team in Houston has been starving for James Harden to exhibit any kind of leadership. I think he is the reason why this team has not grown, especially in the last 2 years. They haven't taken the next step. And I think a lot of it is this guy has never, ever taken full responsibility for what it means to be a superstar. That this guy is an absolutely awful, awful leader.
Okay. Go ahead. I'll let it go.
Yes, he's an awful leader, but he's getting it done. He scores all kinds of points, and he just constantly – people don't like James Harden. They like to crap on him because they see vines. His offensive ability, the ability to get to the free throw line, the whole team functions through him. So as bad as he is as a leader, he's that good on the court, and people are in their emotions when they say James Harden. The most overrated player on the team – on his worst day, the worst year, came there out of shape, out of overweight, and it's still an AC, and he really doesn't have much help. So, and that's just on his back without any help. So James Harden being, I mean, who rates him high? A lot of people don't even have James Harden in the top 10, and he's one of the most disliked players in the whole NBA. So, and last year he had a great season. But so who rates him high in the first place that has him in the upper echelon to make him overrated?
I can give you a little bit more time, Jade, because you were supposed to go.
I think his talent in many circles has put him in the top five, top six, seven.
Name somebody that has him in the top five. Name a respected journalist that has James Harden in the top five.
And I started to say top five, six, seven. He's absolutely in the top ten.
Oh, yeah, I bet you did start to say five, six, seven. You paused. But anyway,
I did. No, they play it back. They will play it back.
He should be in the top seven. He was second in MVP. The players thought he was the best player in the league last year. He won the players' MVP. As much as people want to disrespect it, and they want to say, oh, the media is horrible, but they don't want to respect a Player of the Year award from the actual peers.
All right, we're going to wrap this.
Right, so he is rated highly, even by his peers. I mean, you're making my point right now. He is rated highly last year.
All right, we're going to wrap this one up and got him to go to the closing argument. I think we've got some good substance here. We'll allow 2 minutes for closing arguments each, then I'll allow a little bit of trash talking back and forth, free-flowing time, before I eventually cut you guys off. So Jade went first last time, so RC, it is your time to go first for your closing argument. You have 2 minutes.
I think I just made the case. I really did. If you listen to the answers, they were more powerful. They were more succinct. I was more confident in my answers. I exposed where he wasn't answering the question. Some of you might not agree with my answers, but my answers were rational, and they were delivered well, and they did not. And he actually literally made mistakes within the questions that he was – and I pointed them out time and time again. He made mistakes about the accuracy of some of his questions, in terms of Larry Brown not being a Hall of Fame coach when, or and Dikembe Mutombo not eventually being a Hall of Famer. I believe he already is. So he was inaccurate on some counts. He misspoke. He used and engaged in hyperbole. I love Jay. Jay's a great kid, but he did not win this debate. He did not do what he promised. He did not bring IBS to the people. He didn't do it. He came up short. And there's no shame in that. I applaud him for stepping up to the challenge. Most of you won't even do that. But he didn't get it done today. I did.
All right, Jay, your go.
I just want to say, first of all, I really enjoyed this one. But as far as not answering things adequately or, you know, being factually incorrect, I said all-time coaches. And to me, Larry Brown's not an all-time great coach. But that's beside the point. I mean, there's really nothing today that I've said that I wouldn't say again or I haven't said before. I am very comfortable with every point I made today, especially considering the amount of time I had. And I think that overall, yeah, I definitely think I took this one today.
So we get our little minutes. We get our minutes here. So Larry Brown is not an all-time great coach, but Chuck Daly is. So you're saying, what's the difference between Larry Brown and Chuck Daly as a coach? Jay, what's the difference?
Oof, Chuck Daly, to me, also, you know, I talked about, you know, being a player coach. I mean, he kicked his players' asses, obviously, but, I mean, he really got the most out of guys in ways that I don't think Larry Brown did. I think at times Larry Brown
what team did Larry Brown go
immature.
To? How many times did Larry Brown go to a team and he almost instantly improved? The only failure you have is the Knicks. He even got SMU. They should have been in the tournament, and he may have cheated, but he's won at every level. Like, what else do you need?
Well, I certainly don't want to put down his collegiate
career. And you said he didn't play with the Hall of Famer.
In the NBA, I'm not putting
Hall of Fame,
anywhere near
right?
Mount Rushmore.
Right, Jay? You said Iverson didn't have any Hall of Famers. But Dikembe is in the Hall of Fame. So is Larry Brown.
Dikembe was a fossil in Philadelphia.
Untrue.
That was not the prime of Dikembe.
He averaged 15, 11, and 2 blocks.
You're
going to
tell me
Eric
knows, you know, an All-NBA player?
He was the Defensive Player of the Year, Jay.
Yeah, because they had a great defensive team.
You said there were no
they
Hall of Famers. He has
team.
A Hall of Famer. He had a Hall of Fame coach. He had a Hall of Fame defensive player who's in the Hall of Fame. So that you just misspoke. You can just go ahead and say that you misspoke.
Allen Iverson was a one-man offense on that Philadelphia team. Everybody knows that team had adequate defense. Dikembe Mutombo, even though he was aging.
They were in the top 10 of defense. There's more than adequate. Come on. Now, I'm not taking away from Iverson. He did carry the scoring burden, but they also played very good defense. You can't say that Iverson did not have Isaiah Thomas. He didn't have a lot either, but he made the best of it in the greatest era of all time.
I'll
How
take Dumars over anybody Iverson had.
How many Hall of Famers did Isaiah play with? And Rodman was not a Hall of Famer at that time. He barely averaged double-digit rebounds.
And Lambeer? I would take Lambeer over Dikembe.
Over Mutombo. You would take Bill
Lambeer
over Dikembe.
Lambeer wasn't a black hole on offense.
Oh, my God. Every now and then you got to be white, don't you? Every now and then it just seeps out. And I love Bill Lambeer. But functionally, there's nothing. He wasn't really a better offensive player than Dikembe. And defense, it's not even close. Not
he wasn't.
Even
he
close.
Stretched the floor so Dumars and Isaiah could get to the rim.
He wasn't shooting threes. He was shooting. He was, they weren't even shooting threes that much back then. And he was standing kind of in the high post and at the college three. It wasn't that much of a stretching of the floor. Come on. And to take Dikembe Mutombo, who's a Hall of Famer, over Bill Lambeer, who was a very important part, but he was just a role player. And Dikembe,
Lambeer was a two-way player. Lambeer was a two-way player, and he affected that Detroit
Dikembe.
Team on both sides of the floor.
Is there a year Dikembe didn't average double digits? I mean, in his prime, he always averaged double digits. That year you're talking about, he averaged 15 points a game, 17 points in the playoffs. He could score. He had a few playoff moves. Now, no, was he a Olajuwon? Of course not. But he was a functional offensive player. He's definitely, you can't say Dikembe was a one-way player.
What did
his
offense do for Iverson? Because Lambeer's offense, his ability to stretch the floor, allowed Dumars and Zeke to get into the paint. What did Mutombo's offense do for
Iverson?
We're going
to wrap this up. Starting to get a little circular here. So I think this is a good stopping point here. Great debate, everyone. We will be putting a live poll up for everyone to go ahead and vote. We'll keep that into tomorrow to announce a winner. Thank you both guys for your time. This is a very good debate. And thank you to all the IBS listeners. Until next time.
Good job, Jay. Thanks for doing it.
All right, thanks.